What's one thing that makes you most proud or happiest?
When real families around the world write in to say that things that we have published and created have really helped them, it is an amazing feeling. And nothing financially, being in the press, nothing it comes close to that feeling of actually helping real people. So that is a tonic that you could just keep on drinking, and it would keep you through the late nights, the all-nighters, the never-ending fundraising, all of that. It would be worth it.
Hello, I'm Marcus Fried. Welcome to The Fried Thinker. This is where we talk to business owners and thought leaders, look at cutting-edge marketing techniques, what's working in today's business climate, how to market on a shoestring, and essential skills to get heard above the noise of the competition. I run Fried Thinking, which is a growth marketing agency based in London and Los Angeles, and I'm delighted to welcome today's Fried Thinker. Hannah Feldman is co-founder of Kidaddle, the global online platform for parents looking to discover the best resources to educate and entertain their children. The business is scaling rapidly and serves an audience of millions of parents worldwide. Prior to founding Kidaddle, Hannah worked across law, finance, and media. She was a corporate solicitor at Linklaters before embarking on a banking role at UBS. Hannah worked as a director at PE firm Hamilton Bradshaw alongside the former Dragon's Den tycoon James Caan. She is a mum to three energetic children and lives with her husband and family in North London. Good morning, Hannah. Thanks so much for making the time today. How are you doing today?
I'm doing fantastically. It's boiling hot in London. I'm having a great start to the day.
It is officially schwitzing. All right, let's get stuck in. There's lots to get into. Could you just begin by letting me know a little bit about Kidaddle, really, for people who haven't heard about it before? I love the way on your website it specifically says the problem you solve, but in your own words, how do you
absolutely
present?
So Kidaddle is the destination for family edutainment, and we're the site that helps parents find resources, ideas, and how-tos to educate and entertain their kids the world over. We primarily serve a North American audience, but we've grown exponentially through the pandemic and beyond, and we now serve kidaddling families around the world.
Which is amazing. Was that always the intention? So you're living in London, but primarily it's a US-based market. Was that what you had in mind from the beginning?
No, we've been on a few iterations, and actually the version of kidaddle.com that you see today is post a kind of pandemic stage pivot, whereby we were an app for discovering and booking the best things to do around your city based on your budget, location, and the ages and interests of your kids. And of course, when the pandemic came, there was nothing on to do in any city. So regardless of our location, we couldn't serve our audience. And as we'd been passionate parents who wanted a better solution through technology for the pain point we felt, we thought, well, how can we help parents now? And we pivoted into much more of a publishing and media model to stay relevant to our audience at that time. And the app was soon retired in favor of the new business model, which served many more parents in many more territories. And the North American pull for that content was the largest, hence why we focused our scaling there.
Right, right. And it's very interesting, the business model in itself. So it's completely free for parents to use. It's an amazing resource, whether it's activities, ways of going out, other events. And I imagine more than ever during the pandemic, presumably COVID was in that sense positive for the business, but I guess, was it?
COVID gave birth to the business as it is now, which is a more scalable and my more growth-oriented business that I enjoy running comparably more. Is that a fair way to put it?
It's wonderful to hear a positive spin with all of the tough stories that people have been through with COVID and financially being hit in so many ways. It's really wonderful and heartwarming actually hearing a positive thing that came out of it.
I think also because startups are a kind of experiment in time versus money to find the elusive product market fit. And there's nothing like a world-changing event to focus the mind. Many of our competitors went out of business. Many other businesses I know in other sectors unfortunately hit the wall during that time. So it wasn't a case of a nice-to-have metric that in 3 years could lead to a growth outcome. It was about, can you stay afloat? Can you stay relevant? Can you do it now? And if you can't, the market will bid you farewell. So it was very, very focusing for us. And thankfully, the bet turned out the right one, but everyone was just trying to do what they could do at that time, I think.
Absolutely. And how big is it now in terms of partners and marketing team and sort of people on the ground in terms of the Kidaddle family?
So we have a core employed team, which is very always kept succinct and tight because we expand and contract depending on the need for our content production levels. We average kind of 3,000 to 4,000 pieces of content a month historically, which is a huge deliverable. But the demand from our market has been such that we've had over 500-600 content producers around the world on our books from any stage of the content production process, which is probably 6 to 8 stages, depending on the content being produced. And therefore, we find world-class expertise in different locations to fulfill those stages, but they work within our process and using our content management system, our CMS. And partners, you know, we've partnered with everyone from the likes of the big brands like Disney through kids clothing providers, kids activity providers, you know, you name it. We partner with everybody who wants to serve the family audience, and the demand keeps skyrocketing from those partners to do more content pieces or promotions or, you know, co-authored events, for example, together. So we're really scaling up our partnership offering this autumn and beyond, and actually onboarding team members who can help with that demand. Because currently, in answer to your question, a huge amount of what we've done has been through a very skeleton core team, and we're very, very stretched as a result. And a lot of our marketing has been organic. In fact, we haven't done paid marketing since we were an app.
Well, that's amazing. And so I'd love to get into that a bit more deeply. The content, firstly, it's a prolific amount of content that you're putting out, which I imagine itself is a costly process to get the right quality of good, high-level content. What did you use at the beginning? What marketing techniques were you using at the beginning to grow before it pivoted into such a high scale of content?
So the early days of the website, I honestly believe that the demand from parents of the world to find resources to educate and entertain their kids during the pandemic meant that online search was ablaze with people requiring this information. And because businesses had commonly in the past been kind of your newspaper column with things to do this weekend, or an app like Kidaddle used to be, you know, for booking stuff, there probably was a dearth of good, factually correct, useful content around the pain point we were solving. So we quickly climbed the ranks because we answered the questions that parents had. And when we started to realize that by answering the questions in the correct way, with a real focus on quality and a real focus on rigorous editorial process, could scale the business, we went hell for leather doing more and more and more of that and building a larger workflow, team, resources, budget to deliver that. So effectively, it was find what was working and then continue doing a lot more of it to really scale it up. So the 4,000 plus pieces of content a month didn't come as a, oh, should we give this a try? You know, here we go. It came because we saw from 50 pieces a month or 70 pieces a month what sort of traction we were getting. And we realized that we were providing something that people genuinely needed. And therefore, the more we did, the more the flywheel kept turning. So there wasn't a change, ironically, in the strategy between the beginning and now. It was just a case of identifying the real core questions that were being asked, but also the trends, forecasting the trends, forecasting the topics. We built like a proprietary algorithm to really understand where search is in our market and where parents are looking and what they need. And we try to preempt that. So when we're looking at it as parents, as tech people, and as entrepreneurs, and we're building a roadmap that melds those three areas, really, to focus on the content we create. But the growth is through the content, not through paying to showcase the content.
And it's through creating content that is based on a predictive model. So you're continually trying to spot the trends and see where people are going.
It is an art, not a science. I've learned the hard way. So right. As much as you want it to be kind of put it in a box, tick, tick, tick. It, you know, human nature is not like that. Readers aren't like that. Audiences aren't like that. So you have to make sure you have a team that's nimble enough to understand what, you know, we have a whole team that just updates content. They're not just updating for the year and the date. They're updating for change of public sensibility, you know, certain people fall out of favor, and you have to be very careful what you promote to a family audience, making sure that everything, you know, the factual, you know, accuracy of our content is absolutely critical. So they go back over and recheck facts. So the nuances around what good content is unfortunately not a tick box exercise, but we have a structured brief for each piece, whether it's visual, whether it's video, whether it's written, that we produce. And that structured brief enables the people working on it to understand the requirements, but then they have their own human flair and expertise that overlays it to make it unique. And then we update it to keep making it better.
Yes, yes. It's interesting as well. The way that you're solving the problem for parents who are, whether it's looking for educational resources or something to do or activities at home or places to go, how you're able to craft it around that. I don't have kids yet, but thinking back to say when my sister's boys were young, you know, a rainy Sunday, it's going to inevitably, there's a limit to what you can do in London. You know, are you going to go to the cinema, or are you going to go to soft play or whatever it happens to be? And then where are you going to look up? You know, you're going to go to Mum's Net, or I don't know how many resources are there. You know, I've spent limited time within that world. But it seems like a very powerful response. I mean, what sort of, do you have, how much user, like hands-on user research or user content or end contact do you tend to have with parents who are benefiting from Kidaddle?
Something struck me in what you said before about kind of the content we do. My belief, just to quickly go into that, is that there's a transformational power in doing stuff and being exposed to things you haven't done before. And even if on that rainy Sunday afternoon, you show your kid has to do origami, it can absolutely open a door to a whole new path of creativity and a whole new part of their brain firing up. But you never know until you try. So the whole point of Kidaddle is you don't have to try everything all the time, but there's a whole movable feast here of different ideas and different parts of inspiration, depending on what your kids need and when, and what interests they're naturally becoming open to. So just putting that to one side.
Yeah, which is
great. Which is the way we all learn. You know, we can't imagine, how do you imagine what origami is going to be until someone shows it to you and then you say, I like it, I don't. But exposing children as they're growing and learning to all of these different things is what makes us the people we are. And in the world of AI, which maybe we'll go on to, but, you know, our softer skills and skills in terms of mechanical skills. And, you know, we all of our content is tied to Gardner's theory of intelligences, because there's not just one intelligence that a child develops. Children and adults have multiple intelligences, you know, and we tag our content to the intelligence it helps your child develop. Basically, is that we have multiple intelligences. We don't just have academic intelligence, right? And we need to make sure that a child is, you know, especially the fact that we're not all the most academic, right? But the world post-AI isn't going to reward always the most academic. It's all about having different transferable skills and ways of learning. And therefore, different things expose you to different perspectives and actually can fire up your brain for skills you never even knew you were going to have. And that all starts in childhood. So that was just an aside in terms of going on to that. Please just remind me of your last question, because I went on a tangent, but I just wanted to add that in so you understand why we believe in that so strongly. Well,
I like the tangent. I mean, so the way I was going with the question was actually your contact with the end users, with the parents who are benefiting or the children are benefiting from Kidaddle. But whilst we're on the AI, the marketing using that and using the interactions, I've experienced a bit of a crazy year. Like part of my marketing client work has included copywriting, and lost a $10,000 contract with a tech client in the States, where I was writing a long series of articles. It was specifically, I think part of the reason was there were some cuts on their side in terms of their revenue, but it was also a whole thing of, well, okay, we don't need to hire as much on the copywriting side, because we've got ChatGPT, so we're going to do fewer articles using higher level expertise. And I'm still doing sort of some stuff with the expertise, but nothing like the vast array. And I'm certainly hearing from people who are working within copywriting or other forms of content production, like people are being hit quite hard. But has it been changing your strategy at all? Like, what do you think about that? Like the observations?
Yeah, I mean, no, I'll give you, I think, you know, I mentioned an analogy when we spoke previously about, you know, I was a solicitor for years, and you know, now I do a lot of the legal work for the company, and I recently asked ChatGPT to write me a letter about a particular issue we were experiencing, and the letter was a kind of 7 out of 10 letter, but when I cross-referenced all the clauses to the code that I was looking at, they were all completely wrong. Now, what did ChatGPT do? It gave me a head start. It gave me that first draft, that, you know, end to writer's block, so to speak, and I was able to take it and probably in half the time do a better product, end product, than I would have done had I not had it at all. I think the mistake is thinking it's the full shebang and that it's the finished article, that you just go in, take it, and off you go. Like, great if you're lucky enough to be in that position. But I believe that the human element, which is the checking, the finessing, the curating, the reasoning that comes through a great piece of content, is an overlay if you're going to use any AI tool. And if not, then you can create some brilliant work as well. But it's, to me, kind of, it's like a protein shake for, I don't know, a runner. It's something that starts getting you there, but it by no means wipes the slate clean for those who are doing work in that environment. It just pushes them, I think, to be better, but to change perhaps some of their ways of working. It's definitely not the status quo continuing, I'd say, from that.
No, and it's, exactly, it's got a long way to go, and you can certainly hear the voice of AI, and you can hear ChatGPT's accent, and, you know, even when you're not writing legal contracts. But it's, yeah, it's an interesting strategy, and it's happening so fast in 2023. I mean, such
so
rapid
fast.
Change.
It is an absolute sea change, and I don't think that's going to be reversed. So we just have to work with it and embrace it to the extent that it's viable for our day-to-day lives and businesses. Everyone will be different in terms of that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. On the previous thing of the marketing with relation to the end users and how you grow Kidaddle, what sort of interaction do you have with the parents using it, or the kids who are benefiting from the parents using it? Is there, yeah, how does that mix? How does that
extensive in? Based on the fact that people seem to love to feedback good improvements. Mainly, actually, kind of, this really helped me get through an exam, or this really helped me, and here's a picture I did, or it's like, right. Being a newspaper, in that you get the reader comments back. So we will get hundreds and hundreds of ongoing emails and messages with people giving their thoughts, giving their feelings, giving the output from the content they work with. Some of the pictures, for example, in our nature section, we say, this isn't a Dalmatian of this breed. If you have a picture, please send it in, and we'll find the next day kind of 6 pictures of that Dalmatian, because we couldn't find one in our image library, and people want our content to be better. I suppose a bit like some of the other forums you find, but we're not a user-generated content platform. Kidaddle is the editorial voice, and Kidaddle provides the content, but our users can feedback on it, can inform it, can help us continue to create it. And obviously, we're about to launch a different logged in version of the platform, where people will be able to go on their own curated journeys in terms of sifting through the kind of hundreds of thousands of pieces of content we have to find a more meaningful journey for them. And that will involve obviously getting to know the user better, but also making the user experience better for them.
Beautiful, beautiful. And that makes sense. What do you say if you meet a founder, someone who's starting up their business and is asking your advice on how to approach the marketing, what to do with it, when there's so many different choices and it can seem so overwhelming? Like, you know, writing one article, just one good piece of content, can easily take several hours. And yet, if someone's only got 1 or 2 or 3, 5, small team, there are only so many hours in the day. But then it's not just the writing it and the curating it, it's the sharing, it's the posting, it's the responding to it. And there's business development for outbound leads that have to be focused on. Then there's the delivering the client work. And then there's all these voices of so many different things you can do for your marketing, whether it's the podcast, the videos, etc. But how do you take this wisdom that you've gained through the success of Kidaddle, and then what do you recommend that someone can do in that situation?
Well, interestingly, it was the kind of first version of Kidaddle that taught me a lot more about marketing and kind of hoping for your business to become a certain thing than this version, because the first version, it never achieved what I would call proper, meaning scalable product market fit. And I know now, having a business that has and having a business that hasn't, you know, it's like finding the right one to marry versus the wrong one. Until you find the right one, you never knew what the wrong one felt like, right? So I knew that I had a business that was growing. It wasn't growing as fast as we would like, but it was growing. The issue was the revenue model wasn't as scalable and lucrative as I would like to see it because of the nature of that market. And I think the thing that I learned that way, which is about marketing and also just about being a founder, is sometimes you've got to know when it's not about the marketing strategy, it's just about the way the revenue model or the business is structured and whether any amount of marketing would actually lead to growth. At that point, I would say was probably questionable in our case before the pivot. You know, we had about 100,000 people using the platform, but how would you get to 1 million? You know, you have to make it scalable, especially if you're selling tickets and you need commission coming through. So I think it's also about gut feeling and being open and honest with yourself about what's working and what's not. If you're right at the beginning, it's about experimentation. You know, if you go to an investor for a Series A round and you've shown incredible growth through Facebook ads, but there's a 20% increase every quarter in the price of Facebook ads, you are going to get turned away from that room because you're not going to have metrics that underlie that they can put £1 million or £10 million in and pour fuel on the fire, which is what every investor wants to see. And we can all kid ourselves as much as we like about they have to like us and it has to be wonderful and we have to solve a problem and no one else has. But the truth is, can you show them a scalable business model where you have found product market fit? Your marketing should be able to show you've enhanced product market fit through X spend and Y spend, if you spend it at all, which we haven't with this model, but the previous one we had spent and we did see growth. But because Facebook ads were going a certain way, it wasn't the kind of scalable growth that a VC necessarily wanted to see. So if you're going to spend, think about where, if they give you £1 million, do they want to see 900,000 of it going on Facebook or Instagram ads? If the answer to that is, well, I wouldn't if I raised that money for someone, then you have to think about what can you do to prove out product market fit using budget that isn't vanity, that isn't ego driven, and that will absolutely translate your growth metrics. If you don't know the answer for that, then I would not be spending any money until you really have thought of at least a hypothesis and a theory for why that will be the case. Once you have a theory, you spend 10 grand, you test it, you prove it or disprove it. But be very wary of acquiring customers through social channels at cost when you're not in control of that budget and it's changing all the time, and then going to a VC looking for venture money to continue to scale it that way. Because I think that those times are slightly gone. It's a way to do that going forward. I think people have to be more scrappy and find smaller metrics that show that real people actually want to use and reuse your product. And it's painful, but true.
Right. Brilliant. So I love the fact that there is such specific business strategy and high-end marketing strategy based on the metrics. And at the same time, I mean, in this conversation, at the same time, it's solving a very real, gentle, in many ways, human need of parents at home. What am I going to do with my son and daughter today? They're driving me up the wall. It's a rainy day, although right now, this is like a Californian day in England. I don't know if you've got aircon. I haven't got aircon.
Very few people have aircon.
There's a business. There's got to be a business in there. Start converting
English right. Aircon. There's another conversation.
But yeah, no, I love the balance. And then I think final question: What's one thing that makes you most proud or happiest when you think about Kidaddle and what you've done?
Well, I suppose, can I say two things?
So five things.
Well, one thing is like going back to the point earlier, when real families around the world write in to say that things that we have published and created have really helped them, it is an amazing feeling. And nothing financially, being in the press, nothing it comes close to that feeling of actually helping real people solve real problems in their real life, especially when they're parents like me. And I know how hard some of this journey can be. So that is a tonic that you could just keep on drinking, and it would keep you through the late nights, the all-nighters, the never-ending fundraising, all of that, it would be worth it. And the second thing is knowing after 18 years in the corporate world that you can quit your job and think you kind of could do it, but then you can do it. I think there's so much naysaying to keep people in the 9-to-5, and there's so much kind of financial ease by staying in the position you're in after X many years of working. And to fight the fear and do it anyway, and to find it a really liberating and dynamic and life-affirming experience, personally, has been the other amazing thing for me.
Brilliant. I love it. Well, Hannah, thank you so much. Thank you for the inspiration, and wish you ongoing success. And I appreciate your time today.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been great.
Thank you for watching or listening in. Please make sure you follow our YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. And if you'd like email updates about future episodes, please sign up at freedthinking.com. I'm Marcus Freed. Keep thinking freely and stay creative. Have a great day.